Our guest this hour asks, what happened to the maverick spirit in Wisconsin politics? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, November 20th. We will talk with Mike McCabe this hour, who not only wonders what happened to the maverick spirit in Wisconsin politics, he wonders, how can we get it back? And we'll ask you that question, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Mike McCabe is the founder and president of Blue Jean Nation and the author of Blue Jeans in High Places, The Coming Makeover of American Politics. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what made you wonder about this? You wrote this op-ed piece in the Green Bay Progressive asking what happened to our maverick spirit. What prompted you to write it?
Well, my time around the state capitol goes back about 35 years. I first was around the capitol and the legislative process back in the early 80s and have been involved ever since. And I've seen this really dramatic change in the political culture in our state, and the culture has been transformed in a lot of ways. But one of the things that really strikes me is how much maverick spirit there was in the Wisconsin legislature and in Congress, for that matter, back in the early 80s and for some years after that, and how much sort of mind-numbing conformity there is now, how rank-and-file lawmakers really have little choice but to walk lockstep behind their party leaders, and you see this incredible party discipline that just didn't exist. Party legislative leaders, the assembly speaker or the Senate majority leader, had very few tools to enforce discipline back in the 80s, and we had a governor who famously wore a red vest, who was a Republican, but signed the nation's very first statewide gay rights law. And of course, we had Bill Proxmire in Wisconsin, a Democrat who was famously frugal and of course, would hand out these Golden Fleece Awards lampooning wasteful government spending. And so we saw both Democrats and Republicans who didn't necessarily fit the mold all the time in their parties. You had that strong independent streak, and that seems to have vanished. And it really struck me. And so that's why I posed the question.
Right. And you do see today on both sides, if a Republican isn't conservative enough, someone who's more conservative will challenge that lawmaker or that politician. And, I mean, the same happens with a Democrat. If a Democrat isn't liberal enough, you sometimes see a more liberal Democrat challenging him or her.
Yeah, I've seen sort of a steady extermination of people who aren't doctrinaire in both parties. It's happened over the course of many years where one maverick after another sort of gets picked off. One person who shows an independent streak after another is primaried, is challenged in a primary election, or is in some way sort of forced to the sidelines. And, I remember a time, I'm old enough to remember a time when there were Republicans who supported abortion rights, and there were Democrats who were anti-abortion. And you just don't see that anymore on that particular issue. All the Republicans are pro-life, all the Democrats are pro-choice. They really are all doctrinaire on this issue. They all follow the cues of leadership. And I think there's some powerful reasons behind this, but I think it's one of the things that is beginning to extinguish what I think was really unique about Wisconsin in particular. We had such we had a political culture with such a strong independent streak, you know, that maverick spirit that I talk about, that was so pronounced in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is losing that and becoming so much more like all so many of the rest of the states or regions of the country.
Well, so what is, when did the maverick streak start evaporating? When did things start to change?
I really started to notice the sort of the process of excommunicating independents from the ranks of the parties in the 1990s, and it accelerated once we got into the 21st century, and it's really intensified in very recent years. So it's I think it's been a gradual process. It hasn't happened overnight, but it's something that's happened over the last couple decades, or maybe 2.5 decades, from my vantage point. I mean, that's when I've really noticed it. You know, you just didn't see the independents, given the kind of grief that they've been given in recent years. You didn't see that back in the early to mid 1980s. You know, we still had a very strong, very pronounced maverick spirit in Wisconsin then.
For example, Republican State Senator Dale Schultz.
Well, Dale Schultz is the latest example of somebody who effectively was excommunicated. He was given a lot of grief by his leaders, his party leaders, for you know, breaking ranks on some key issues, and then eventually he was threatened with a primary opponent, somebody who was farther to the right than him, was going to challenge him, and it was pretty clear that the party leadership and the party establishment was going to favor the more right-wing alternative, and so he finally threw up his hands and said, it's time for me to resign or retire. It happened to Barb Lorman in Fort Atkinson. It happened to Peggy Rosenzweig in Wauwatosa. I watched one after another of the sort of the independent Republicans being picked off and facing primary opponents, and they were defeated from the right. And you've seen the same dynamic happen over on the Democratic side. I saw there were representatives on the Democratic side like Jervis Hefner and Bill Rogers and you know, people like that who, you know, the Assembly Speaker at the time was Tom Loftus. He couldn't tell those guys what to do or what to say or how to vote. They were reflections of their district. They were rural Democrats, and they were representing constituencies that were more socially conservative and economically struggling, and they were reflections of those constituencies, and there was nothing the leadership could do at that time to sort of force them to fall in line. And leaders today have a lot more tools that they can use to sort of twist arms and leverage conformity within their ranks.
Yeah. So, what is driving this change?
Well, I think one of the factors is certainly the phenomenon of polarization and the extent to which we're seeing more divisiveness and a more stark division between the parties. That's a factor. And I don't want to downplay that factor. You know, I don't think there's any question, and polling shows it, but also just common sense, you know, the eye test shows it. We're in a very polarized moment, and there is a lot more animosity between the parties and a lot more partisan division than there has been probably in living memory. That's a factor. But I think you can't ignore the impact of money in politics. When I reflect back on my time around the Capitol in those early years, in the early to mid-1980s, you could run for state assembly in a very competitive district for $6,000 or $8,000. That was a contested race in a competitive district. For state senate, you needed $20,000 or $30,000. $40,000 was a fortune to spend on a state senate race. Well, in more recent years, we've had an assembly race where over $1 million was spent, and we've had a state senate race where over $10 million was spent. And so, you know, in the 1980s, it was so remarkably inexpensive to run for office that if you were fairly well known and well connected and you were a reflection of your constituency, you could get elected there and you didn't need anybody's help from outside your district. Well, today, one of the things that I think people have to come to terms with is when you look at where the money comes, where it comes from for these legislators, the average state legislator in Wisconsin is getting two-thirds of the money for the next campaign from people outside their district. So that's a powerful force that prevents them from simply taking their cues from their voting constituents. They have to constantly be concerned about their cash constituents. And then the other thing is
Let me hold you on the other thing until after news, because we have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next. And then we'll continue talking with Mike McCabe, who is the author of Blue Jeans in High Places and the founder and president of Blue Jean Nation. And we'll continue our discussion after the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Mike McCabe. He is the founder and president of Blue Jean Nation and the author of Blue Jeans in High Places, The Coming Makeover of American Politics. He also authored a piece that appeared in the Green Bay Progressive. We have it linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What happened to the maverick spirit in Wisconsin politics? And we are talking about what happened and why, and we will talk about how we might get it back, or if we want to get it back. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We were talking about money in politics just before our news break, and Lisa on Facebook says there is too much money involved. A candidate has to fundraise constantly or be in the pocket of a huge donor, meaning Mike McCabe, that maybe there's not huge donors that are funding the maverick politician these days?
Well, you know, not only do individual lawmakers have to constantly raise money, and they are constantly, always in the process of trying to come up with money for their next election campaign. But another factor is that they've become much more reliant on the legislative leaders and party leaders to supply them with money. You know, when it cost $6,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 to run for state assembly 30 years ago, you could raise that kind of money from friends and neighbors and people you knew in your district. But now, when it can cost several hundred thousand dollars, we even had a $1 million assembly race in Wisconsin, you can't come up with that money from your own community, and you start to have to need to go outside your area. And as I said before, the average legislator gets two-thirds of the money for the next campaign from people living outside their districts. They also have become heavily reliant on the legislative leaders who dole out money that they've raised. Well, that problem is going to become even worse, because in recent days, lawmakers went into what they called an extraordinary session to make changes to state law that will allow the political donations that legislators receive to be twice as large. They doubled the campaign contribution limits, but they also took limits off of donations to political parties and to the campaign committees that are run by legislative leaders. So the really big money, unlimited donations, will be going to the party and to the leadership PACs. That's going to give those leaders the ability to dole out money to legislators who follow them, who vote the way they want them to vote, who behave the way they want them to behave. And it's going to put the party bosses and the leaders in a position of being able to lead the rank-and-file lawmakers around by the nose even more than they have been before. So, you know, they just went and made the problem even worse. The exact phenomenon that has been eroding the maverick spirit in Wisconsin, the problem has been aggravated significantly, and I fear can eventually extinguish that maverick spirit altogether.
Yeah. There are two bills that the legislature has sent to Governor Walker. One overhauls campaign finance laws. Also, there is a bill that dismantles the Government Accountability Board. It does away with that nonpartisan agency and splits it into two and makes it more partisan. Mike McCabe, some are decrying that this is the end of what we used to think of as the squeaky, clean, transparent, open government of Wisconsin is all going away now. Do you say the same thing?
Well, it's certainly these actions are devastating blows to what's left of Wisconsin's reputation for clean and open government. To be sure, they basically have opened the floodgates even wider. We had too much money in politics already, and basically these lawmakers said, no, we don't have enough. We need even more, and we need to have unlimited donations going to parties and legislative leaders. We need donations that are twice as large coming to each individual legislator. We need more money, and we need less oversight. We should have the watchdog agencies under our thumb to a greater extent, and they made those changes, and those are devastating blows. But to conclude that ends democracy as we've known it in Wisconsin, I think is doesn't take into account that democracy is really more verb than noun. It's not just something that we have, it's something that we do. And as long as citizens are willing to do democracy, democracy can't be taken away from us. And so really what it comes down to now is if we are being denied authentic representation in the halls of government, if we are watching political corruption grow, and what was just done in recent days is nothing if it's not a recipe for more corruption. Those are ominous signs, and those are devastating blows to Wisconsin's traditions of clean and open and honest government. But that just means that leaves us as citizens in a position of having to practice democracy all that much more intensely in other ways, taking to the streets and engaging in activism aimed at restoring those traditions and restoring democracy. So, you know, I think when you look at history, and that's why I really wrote the book that I wrote, was to look back at comparable periods in history where democracy faced these kinds of threats, and to reflect on the reactions from plain people, from ordinary citizens who were able to force corrupt political establishments to change their ways and reconnect meaningfully with the people. And you know, that's why Blue Jean Nation was formed. It is about trying to rally citizens to the cause of transforming a political system that is now failing us, getting citizens to try to force these officials to change their ways and to restore meaningful democracy. That's the challenge for all of us as citizens. When things go go wrong or go haywire in the halls of government, that means that you have to take to the streets, you have to take to town halls and neighborhood meetings and figure out ways to force the system to self-correct.
Mike McCabe is the founder and president of Blue Jean Nation, and let's talk about how do we restore meaningful democracy, if indeed you feel as though it is absent these days. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our first caller is Bernie in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning to you both. Mike, I'm a fan. I wanted to suggest something that I think is every bit as important as getting the money out of elections, and that would be to have instant runoff voting in general elections, not in primaries, but in general elections. Just a very simple ability to rank your choices 1 and 2 because I think third-party and independent candidates don't have a chance because of people's unwillingness in general. I'm not one of them, but most people are unwilling to cast a vote when they consider that what they consider the you know, worst of the two evils will prevail, especially at the national level. This is needed. And unfortunately, I never hear talk of that, but I think that would revitalize the ability of independent and third parties to get moving. And I think a lot of reforms, such as money out of elections, is going to come from that venue.
Mike?
Well, I agree with you 100%, but such a change will never be made by officials who, of course, represent the two major parties and are increasingly under the thumb of their party leaders. And that's why I wrote in the book that, you know, we have a system that actively discriminates against third party and independent candidacies. We have a two party system in America, for better or worse. And so I wrote about ways that citizens in the past were able to work within that two party system to compel real change, landscape altering change. And, you know, I talk about the need for a first party movement rather than a third party movement. And you know, the reality is that we need to be able to infiltrate the major parties, force them to change. That's what ultimately could get us to the point of getting something like you suggest, where you've got rank order voting. Keep in mind that we had a two-party system back at the turn of the 19th century. As we moved into the 20th century, there was a two-party system there and two major parties, and yet direct primary elections were created by the progressive movement, and of course all kinds of other reforms, labor, worker rights reforms, and railroad regulation, and progressive taxation, and so many other reforms came out of the progressive movement. But one of the things they did is they banned corporate contributions and corporate election spending. In 1897, the practice of bribing public officials was outlawed. And direct primary elections were created because of a movement that compelled both major parties to change their ways. And, you know, I refer to those as first party movements. And I think we have to think as citizens about how do we create conditions where we will have people within the major parties who will feel that they have no choice but to give us reforms like the one you just identified, where we could actually rank candidates by order of preference at the ballot instead of having to just choose one. That would be a wonderful reform, but it's a reform we won't get until we as citizens are able to make enough change within the major party structures to compel them to begin to give us what we want again. And that's the problem, is that we're losing authentic representation. They're increasingly taking their cues from the party bosses and from their donors, not from their voting constituents. And we need to reassert the power of voting constituents. And that's our great challenge in our time with respect to our democracy.
Mike, we have other callers with questions or suggestions when it comes to political reforms. But in your piece, What Happened to the Maverick Spirit in Wisconsin Politics, you also ask a number of other questions, like how did so many of us come to see teachers as public enemies? How come we need so many gates and locks on the walls? So how did so many scaredy cats take up residence in the home of the brave? Why have we become so suspicious and fearful of strangers? Why and when did we become so quick to judge and eager to condemn others? What happened to neighbors helping neighbors? And you go on. How are these questions related to our maverick spirit?
Well, they do all speak to ways that we've changed as a society, and they all speak to ways that we are different from the people who the generations who came before us, and the ways that we're even different, the ways we've changed even over the course of our lifetimes, and I don't think that the changes that are happening in politics and the condition of our democracy today is happening in a vacuum. It is a reflection of a lot of forces in society that are having the effect of polarizing our politics and dividing us as a citizenry. And I think we have to look at all of the ways that we're changing if we're going to get ourselves out of the ruts that we're in.
Yeah. So how did so many of us come to see teachers as public enemies?
That's a fascinating thing because, when I reflect back on my own life and the impact that teachers had on my life, and when I think most people think about where they're at in life and how they got there, there's always a story of a teacher or two who played a huge role in inspiring and nurturing them and helping them get to where they're at. One of the things I wrote in that article was that whenever a teacher told my parents that I had messed up in school, they always, and I mean always, took the teacher's word. They never bought my excuses or what I had to say. So there was just a trust level there. And I think, unfortunately, we have seen a lot of, we've seen groups of working people pitted against other groups of working people. We've seen divide and conquer tactics employed in our political world that have led a lot of us to start seeing each other as enemies. And it's not the first time that this has happened. We've seen divide and conquer methods used throughout history, and then there are times that follow where people start to pull back together. And I think as a society, we need to think about how we can get away from scapegoating and get away from being so willing to see each other as enemies and identify ways that we can find common ground and pull together again as a citizenry.
Cindy in Burlington called, but she dropped. She wanted to say that she has been seeing television and our culture in general becoming more divisive and fear-based in recent years. She thinks overall that our culture is turning more into us versus them, and that's affecting everything, including politics.
I agree, and that's why I say that I think it's important to look at all of the different ways that we're changing as a society. And that when I pose that question, when and why did we become so quick to judge and eager to condemn others? I cited a book by an author named Bill Bryson. The book's called One Summer, America in 1927, And it's a book I've been reading recently. And one thing that struck me there was Bryson wrote that in 1927, he says there may never have been another time in the nation's history when more people disliked more other people from more directions and for less reason. And when I read that, I thought, what we're living through right now is starting to feel a whole lot more like 1927 than at any other time in my lifetime.
Let me take a call before we go to news. Paul in Menominee Falls, you're a teacher or were a teacher?
Yes, I've been in public education for 30 years, and up until Act 10, I always heard the same thing from everybody. You didn't go into it for the money. Well, you must really love what you're doing. And after Act 10, after Walker and Mark Belling and Charlie Sykes got a hold of this, we were doing nothing but ripping off the taxpayers. And since then, I think that the public perception of teachers has just taken a huge hit. And thanks for the great show, and thanks for bringing up the topic.
Yeah, well, thank you, Paul. I'm going to let Mike McCabe think about that over the newscast and then respond after news. We are talking about what happened to Wisconsin's maverick spirit and what happened to Wisconsin's a neighborly culture. And how do we get it back? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back and we will talk about some of the changes that might make a difference. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. The This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. So do you agree with our guest that Wisconsin has lost its maverick spirit? Do you see an increased lack of neighborliness? Do you see more us versus them in our society? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Mike McCabe about what is driving these changes and what needs to be done to restore them. And we're welcoming your questions and your views. Mike McCabe is the founder and president of Blue Jean Nation, author of Blue Jeans in High Places, The Coming Makeover of American Politics. And just before our news break, we heard from a caller who said, you know, he was a teacher and he remembers people viewing him as a public servant and thinking, you know, hey, you're not in this for the money. Thinking he was doing a valuable thing, teaching our children. But then he said conservative talk radio and conservative politicians, including Governor Walker, turned that all around and made it look like teachers were ripping off the taxpayer and that teachers had it a whole lot better than the average taxpayer. And that's how he sees it happening. Mike McCabe, I'm thinking there was a whole bunch of protests over that. People took to the streets and tried to stop that from happening, and it didn't do any good.
Well, that was a manifestation of divide and conquer. I mean, that was an illustration of what I was talking about sort of pitting one group of workers against another group of workers and getting people to see each other as enemies. And yes, there were protests, but I think the real solution, the way out of this trap is for us to figure out ways to reestablish common ground. And I think, you know, I don't have a magic wand to wave over this problem, but here's a thought, here's an idea. I think the solution really lies in us finding ways to look beyond our own self-interest, to look outside of ourselves, and to think about what people in other parts of the state or in other sectors of the economy want and need, and to look for ways to establish common ground. When I go to urban areas, I hear people say we need more urban mass transit or we need neighborhood revitalization. But one of the things I'll tell them is that if you want to get those things, you're going to have to take seriously the fact that out in rural communities you can't get a cell phone signal or wireless internet connection. And if you don't advocate for those things as aggressively as you advocate for something like urban mass transit, you're not going to get urban mass transit. And you know, if people want public workers to be treated with respect, then we all need to advocate just as aggressively for increasing the minimum wage and dealing with the fact that people in the private sector are hurting economically and are struggling to make ends meet. And you can't support yourself, much less a family, on the minimum wage or a wage anywhere near it. And so I think we have to figure out ways to identify sort of common interests and be willing to work as hard for somebody else's wants and needs as we're working for our own wants and needs. And that's the way out of the divide and conquer trap. I don't know any other way to escape it.
Yeah. Helen in Cross Plains is with us. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a couple of comments about this. One of the things that I discovered, I'm a Cross Plains resident, and is that during that time when they took away collective bargaining, what was happening was it wasn't the teacher's fault, and it wasn't necessarily the government's fault, but we have this union, and the union was collecting $1,000 per employee for health insurance over the cost of the health insurance. They were gobbling that kind of money up. That's taxpayer money that should go to the schools, and that's what's happened. There's been a lot of places where real estate taxes have gone down, and the teachers have not seen any change in their health insurance. They're getting the same thing from that. What happened, though, that was bad was that teachers, because they perceived that we were after them instead of really trying to make it better for everybody, they protested in a way that was very, very unnerving and made a lot of people not like teachers. And I'll tell you, teachers have a very, very, very hard job. I there's no argument with that. It's tougher and tougher to teach children because there's so much.
Right, Helen, I'm sorry. I'm going to jump in just because we have very little time left, but you made a good point. She's saying this was not anti-teacher. This was anti-union wasting money, I think, is what she was getting at. And then the teachers in the protest turned a lot of people off.
You can tell that this is still very much an open wound, and it's something that we have to come to terms with as a society. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really clear is that when there were strong unions in the private sector, and when you had a lot of people who were part of union families, it was not easy to divide and conquer working people. But as unions started being killed off in the private sector, it really left the public sector as the last refuge or the last domain of union strength, and that made public workers very vulnerable to divide and conquer political tactics because politicians could go to people who are private sector workers and say, hey, your taxes are going to pay for somebody to have something that you don't even have. And the politics of resentment were able to be used to great effect. And it clearly has still left an open wound. So the way out of the trap to me is that we need to rethink how we think about worker rights and about labor issues and focus on trying to create a system and a structure that helps people regardless of what sector of the economy, help workers in every sector of the economy. That finding that common ground and those common interests is what is going to get us out of this trap. If we don't do that, then cynical politicians are still going to be able to pit one group against another group and use divide and conquer politics to their own benefit, and I think to our society's great demise.
Yeah. Well, you know, let me, because we are running short here, go to Jim in Brookfield next. Hello, Jim.
Hello. I'd just like to say I think a lot of the divisiveness that we see in society today goes back to the late 80s when they repealed the Fairness Doctrine under the Reagan administration. I think it gives cable news and AM radio a 24/7 microphone to, you know, spew divisive rhetoric on a 24/7 basis.
You don't have to have both sides on public affairs programs anymore, Mike McCabe?
Great point. No, I can't disagree with that at all, and that's part of the changing landscape in our society and something that we need to figure out ways to get around.
Yeah. Steve emails, please ask Mike to discuss ALEC and their role with all the laws being passed lockstep with other states. All of these votes, he says, written by ALEC.
Well, ALEC is, of course, it's a acronym for the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's basically a bill mill that's based in Washington, D.C. that writes state legislation from that central location and then sort of ships the model legislation around to lawmakers around the country, and they all pass the same laws in state after state after state after state, and it's corporate financed and really controlled by big business interests, and to me it's just another reflection of the loss of maverick spirit, because instead of lawmakers taking their cues from their own constituents that they're supposed to represent and getting their ideas for bills from the people they're representing, they're getting their ideas from bills and the actual language for the legislation from this outfit out of Washington, D.C. And that is it's a really striking illustration of the loss of maverick spirit and the independent streak that we used to see, because so many of people were talking about Act 10. Well, Act 10 was ALEC legislation. So many of the major pieces of legislation, the mining bill that was passed here in Wisconsin, those were bills that were model pieces of legislation that were created by ALEC, and so we're not seeing representatives getting their ideas from the people who voted for them. They're getting their ideas from the big donors and the big lobbying operations.
Yeah, Ross on Facebook says, I think the problem started with gerrymandering congressional districts. districts. Senate and presidential politics are still somewhat balanced, but congressional elections are much more partisan because of these gerrymandered districts. Well, not to mention state legislative districts. We're kind of set in non-competitive districts for about a decade, aren't we, Mike McCabe?
Yeah, you know, certainly gerrymandering is a big force, and it's a major factor. But I've seen the independent streak begin to weaken and then eventually almost become extinguished over the course of several decades. And in the latest round of redistricting that will curse us here for the whole decade. It didn't happen until after I was already seeing clear signs. So I don't think it's the only factor. It's a contributing factor, and it's one of those things that actually will make the problem worse, because we have a lot of lopsided districts now. We have a lot of districts that are either filled with Republican voters or filled with Democratic voters, and that will naturally produce legislators who are very rabid partisans and who are no darn good at talking to people on the other side. Yeah. So it's something that will contribute to an aggravation of the problem. I don't know if it's the original cause of the problem.
Well, we have less than a minute, and I guess what do we do to reclaim the maverick spirit that you think we've lost?
Citizens have got to do what citizens did in the past, and that's gather together, start to think more broadly about interests outside of their own interests, think about building coalitions with citizens from other parts of the state and other walks of life, and build organizations strong enough to scare politicians and to threaten politicians enough where they have to start to reconnect with the people again.
Thank you very much for being with us. Mike McCabe is the founder and president of Blue Jean Nation, author of Blue Jeans in High Places, The Coming Makeover of American Politics. More information on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.